Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Score rewind.
We had our $100 Nassau going, and I've got them down maybe three bets, maybe four bets on the front side. I was playing pretty good that day. I tee my ball up on 10, and before I take a swing, he said, all right, I'll play you this side for $1 million.
Playing back the best that you missed today on The Score.
Radio.com's Cody Decker is never shy. You ask him a straight-up question, the man is going to give you a straight-up answer. And he did that with a conversation today with Dan Bernstein, including why he hates Yasmani Grandal. Let's take a listen to this entertaining chat.
I would love to know, is that really possible? Do you think that players can understand, look, it's with all these protocols in place and everything that the game is trying to do, we have a responsibility as well to not be idiots about this?
Is it possible? Yes. Do I find it to be likely? No. I played for 11 years, and I love baseball. I love baseball players more than just about anything. But I cannot sit here and pretend that baseball players are the smartest bunch when it comes to anything. Lucas is an incredible rare example of the opposite. I've known him since he was like 12 years old. Lucas is one of the brightest, smartest, most kind and generous people you could ever meet in your life. I don't like the idea that we're putting this on the players to police themselves. I quite frankly think that the players' union needs to step in and work with Major League Baseball and the teams in general to honestly put together protocols. Specific protocols of punishments for players that break certain quarantines. I think the only way this works is if everyone just stays in. All it takes is one player to infect the entire league. And, you know, you're seeing players drop out right now. Ian Desmond wrote a very long and poignant post on why he's not playing this season. It's understandable. It's commendable. But, you know, it's scary. You know, the KBO has a rule in place right now. If one player gets COVID, the whole league gets shut down. And I don't think Major League Baseball is going to do that. I think once game one starts, they're pushing through. And I think it's what's in the best interest of the players. And honestly, staffs and coaching staffs. There are managers in baseball who are immunocompromised, one of which being Chicago White Sox manager Ricky Renteria. Not to mention Dave Roberts, who survived cancer a few years ago out of Los Angeles. There are serious consequences to this, and I think something needs to be put in place.
I just don't know how they enforce some of the little things around the edges. If they say, you know, the first baseman holding on a runner and sweeping the tag down, you don't want to get too close or hold the tag on too long. The idea that baseball players aren't going to spit. I mean, you can't throw a flag every time a Major League Baseball player spits on the ground. Some of this to me is still wishful thinking, even in the protocols themselves.
It's definitely wishful thinking. I mean, I can just imagine myself playing into the game right now. I wouldn't be spitting to be defiant. I would do it just out of pure habit. It's a very odd time. Do I think this is possible? Yes. I think they can get through this. But to sit here and be happy and excited about them getting through it unscathed is a completely different conversation. I don't know how they're going to enforce any of these things. I don't know if what kind of punishments are involved if these rules are violated. They haven't really announced them. This was kind of a big problem for me when we were sitting around haggling over a financial agreement that was already signed in March, and we spent 3 days on safety.
I've been walking through this scenario, and I'm trying to figure out what the ramifications are. In a given baseball game, these are competitors. These are guys who play a game, who there are certain moments of machismo that flare up, and we know exactly what they are. Whether it's a hard slide on the bases or whether it's somebody who's throwing inside at 100 miles an hour, tempers flare. We've seen it with whether it's Amir Garrett or anybody else. And we know what the presumption is. The presumption is I'm gonna go visit that mound, and you and I are gonna have at it. Or the bullpen's gonna empty, and the dugouts are gonna empty. That's not happening, and we know it's not happening. That there's no way, even with all of these assumptions and all of our usual chain of baseball escalation of macho stupidity, it can't do that for a couple reasons. First of all, nobody wants to be rubbing all over each other in one of these baseball slap fights. And secondly, it's a 60-game season in which when all those suspensions come down, your team's entire chance could be shot by multiple suspensions. So where does that go? How do we sublimate the tension when inevitably we've got a pitcher throwing inside or hitting a bunch of guys? Or I'm going to hit your guy. You're going to hit this guy. It can't go anywhere now.
It's actually what I was talking about. I talked about this last week when it comes to the Houston Astros, because Kenley Jansen, closer for the Dodgers, came out saying, well, I'm not going to throw it at any of the Astros. Yeah, of course you're not, because if you lose a game this season, it really, really matters, and you can't put Astros on base. It's going to be interesting. So any macho machismo nonsense that we've come to know and be part of the game, it's going to have to be put on hold till next spring training.
And I do think that there's always been a professional courtesy there. And as much as the competition is big and real and intense, do you think not just going through the labor negotiation when the players were tighter than ever and held their ground and got their prorated pay, that the owners failed to fracture the union? They failed in using all of their media mouthpieces to try to turn the conversation against them. People are fans are behind the players more than ever in any anecdotal Twitter poll that you see. Plus, there's the collective bargaining that's going to occur after this season. Do you think that the fraternity, the player brotherhood in some ways in that regard is stronger than it's ever been?
These last 2 months have shown me that the players union is actually the strongest it's been since I started playing professional baseball. After watching Tony Clark get absolutely decimated in the last CBA, the players were furious. But after this whole Astros scandal, you saw all spring training, players were eating each other alive during spring training. It was ugly, to the point where the owners clearly smelled blood in the water. They tried their very best to break the union even more, and it backfired. Now I think we're in for one hell of a dogfight this upcoming CBA. And I think if these last 2 months were any indication of what it's going to be, this is going to get ugly, because this got ugly just now, and it was about an agreement that was already made in March. It was about an already made agreement. That's what's so mind-boggling to me about it. So if that's what we were doing about something that we already agreed to, what are the disagreements going to be?
We're talking with Cody Decker on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. And we've no idea what the baseball is going to look like or when it's going to look normal. When you would go through spring training, let alone a second spring training, what for you was the last thing to come back, the last thing to get to 100% readiness?
Timing, looking at off-speed pitches. You know, the first few weeks of spring training, especially in games, the pitchers are, for the most part, just throwing fastballs and changeups. You might see a slider here and there, but for the most part, early spring training is the easiest time to hit, even though your timing's off. It's once you get to towards the end, all of a sudden they're feeding in breaking balls, hard breaking balls, sliders at 91 miles per hour, low and away. You know, that week is usually a lull for just about everybody, but that's just about it. It's just getting in the repetitive nature of playing every day. I honestly think spring training is about a week or two too long. It becomes one hell of a grind when you get towards the very end. but it's, you know, it's just getting the at-bats and repetitiveness. And once you get out into the season, it's almost like the first couple of weeks of season is usually a couple of weeks out the gate is a little slow until you start getting the rhythm of what the actual baseball season is. You know, it's a different time period than it is in spring training because you're playing during the day in spring training after a full morning of workouts. And during the season, everything's at night. So it's almost like getting jet lag for the first week.
Baseball teams, more than teams in other sports, live together. They spend a lot of time in that clubhouse. So you hear Joe Maddon talk about it, and he thinks it's too much. He said, I don't want guys in here 5 hours before the game sipping coffee out of a styrofoam cup and watching video the whole time. That's why he's held his American Legion week. He said, you know, show up and play. You want to show you ride your bike over in your uniform and show up and play. It's all going to be different in these clubhouses now where you're not going to have the connective clubhouse life. They don't want you there. They want you in, you know, in and around the dugout, and then even socially distanced. I've never been a real baseball romantic as far as clubhouse chemistry and some of that stuff. But I think we're gonna get some kind of objective test of how things are different with teams, relationships, and veteran leadership, and all that. How does a team handle the fact that you're not gonna be like a baseball team? That you're not gonna be in and around, which is what so many people love about the sport.
I mean, I'm going to tell you, I understand why you wouldn't be romantic about it, but I got to tell you, the best teams I ever played on hung out in the clubhouse for hours before the game. I would get to the field every day at noon so I can get my own personal work in. And then, just like Joe Maddon would say, I would sip a lot of coffee out of the styrofoam cup. But how is it going to look? I don't know. I don't know what this is going to do to dynamics of certain teams. I think it could hurt a team like the Chicago White Sox, who are young and impressionable, but super talented. I look at who the veteran leadership on that team is right now. You have Dallas Keuchel, but he's new to the team. And I can tell you right now, Yasmani Grandal is not going to be the leader of anything ever. It's going to be interesting to see. You got some incredible young guys like Moncada. Lucas Giolito is young, but you want a guy who's a leader? Lucas Giolito. We'll see what this does to dichotomy of certain teams, but I think older veteran teams are going to still, you know, probably dominate their divisions. I mean, I'm expecting a lot out of the Dodgers. The Minnesota Twins are another team I'm expecting a ton out of. I think the Rays are going to do a lot of damage. I think they have a good shot of even beating the Yankees in their division, provided the Yankees don't come back completely healthy. I think this is going to be the most unique season ever, but the 60-game portion is what's going to be super interesting about it, because everybody's on a dead sprint. A 10-game winning streak is the equivalent of a 25-game winning streak. This is going to be madness. I mean, I talked about teams that, you know, are completely out of it just out of the gate, and that's Detroit and Baltimore and the Pirates. But if the Pirates go on a 9-game winning streak, they have a chance to sneak into the playoffs. This is going to be insane, and I honestly can't wait to see it.
Why did you say what you just said about Grandal?
Oh, I played with him, and he did steroids in the dugout and the clubhouse in front of us. I couldn't stand him.
Is that the reason why you couldn't stand him, or are there other reasons?
I just didn't really care for him. I just chalk it up that he was young, and, you know, he's probably grown up quite a bit since then. He's been through quite a lot since then. He's played for multiple organizations now, and he's had a lot of success. The version of Grandal I played with was a lot younger and a lot different.
Wow. I mean, because that's – did anybody say anything to him if, as you say, he was doing steroids right there in front of everybody?
No, we didn't know. He was using those suckers. He was part of the Biogenesis scandal. He was, like, eating gummies that were laced with HGH. And he got caught. He got caught and he got suspended. But immediately after suspension, he just, you know, went right to the big leagues like nothing ever happened. So – is there a little bit of bitterness from a lot of us on that one? Yeah. But, you know, he has proved to be a very solid baseball player. He's an all-star, and he could help that team win.
One thing you talk about, and you see leadership on the White Sox maybe not having the same effect. That was, you know, really Jose Abreu and having the young Cuban players, and, you know, having Luis Robert and having Eloy Jimenez, maybe that lessens the effect of the mentorship, the whatever they thought they were getting from Abreu.
Maybe. Yeah, there's a possibility. I think the White Sox are about a year away and 1 year away from legitimately competing. But based on this expanded playoffs, there's no reason that maybe they can really get in there this year. They're young, they're talented, and they're going to be together for a while. That's a pretty good core group of players. I think I think the Twins right now are the best team in that division. I think the Twins, I picked them to go to the World Series, you know, before COVID even hit. But I think the White Sox have a real shot at trying to battle for one of those wild card spots. You know, Lucas Giolito, what he did last year as a starter was incredible. And I think he's only going to get better because he's just got that mentality to him. Anderson, I think, is one of the most dynamic young players in baseball, and I can't wait to see what he does next. I think this is going to be a fun team to watch going forward. I really do.
Before we let you go, Cody, I started the show by pointing out how extraordinary it is that we have baseball players and NBA players, and I'm sure we will have hockey players and football players opting out for whatever reason. And it's for primarily health reasons, but we heard Fred VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors say that we in the NBA, as young black men deciding to come back as a group and entertain and distract, said we probably shouldn't be playing right now. We should be dedicating ourselves to a much more important movement. This is just, it's such a remarkable time. And I'm old enough to remember on this radio station going back decades when a player would take a day because his wife was going into labor and he wanted to be there at the birth of his child. And these phone lines would light up, and who does this guy think he is? I pay his salary, I'm a season ticket holder, and he's got to come play the game, and now they might lose. And now fans, the average fan, has evolved to a point where it's completely understood that a player is a fully fledged human being who is free to make some of these decisions on his own. It really, it's amazing to me that there hasn't been outcry, there hasn't been outrage, there hasn't been, come on, you got to entertain me, you got to earn your millions. That I think the average fan of pro sports has come a long way in understanding the athlete as person.
I think you're right. I think a lot of the average fans have grown a little bit to see what this actually takes and what there is. Not to say that there isn't plenty of the I would play for free crowd, but the average fan really has grown. But to the flip side of Van Vleet's comment is, yes, I think everyone should do their part absolutely for these extraordinary causes. That being said, I think sports lends themselves to the grandest stage of all to fight for those causes. And where we are right now as a country with these causes, I think we'll get a lot of people talking. How much did we talk about what Kaepernick did a few years ago at the time and watch the narrative get absolutely stolen and changed up to what it actually was about? I don't think that happens right now. And I think sports gives you the stage to express your opinion and express your feelings towards this.
I think we're in a different place. I went so far earlier as to say that sports is different forever now. I don't think that this is a bell that can be unrung, and I think it's a good thing.
I hope we are different and better forever now. I really do. There are some things every day that make me lose a little bit of hope. Just get on my Twitter timeline and you'll see. But
I do.
But it's just, you know, that it seems like we are slowly and kicking and screaming getting into a better place. And that's, you know, they always say things always have to get worse before they get better. And can you say that anything's ever been worse than the last couple of months? But I think we're getting better. And I think sports is better off because of it. And I hope we as fans will continue to be better off because of it as well.
Radio.com's Cody Decker on the Dan Bernstein Show earlier today. He hates Yasmani Grandal, hates him, or at least the younger version of Yasmani Grandal. We should say that. How about some football talk? How about it? The Wednesday, what day is it? It's Tuesday?
It's Tuesday, Joe.
Okay. The weekly visit of Hub Arkish on the McNeil and Parkin Show is always entertaining, and I'm wondering if it happened again. So I need to hear it next. Did it happen again? Did Danny float out an idea to Hub and Hub just smack it away? All right, let's find out together next. This is Joe O Show Rewind Hour on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
How about the timing with the Patriots? They know the punishment is coming down for their cheating or whatever you want to call it. Maybe it was too harsh, but you're the New England Patriots. When you get caught filming the other team, you're going to get in trouble. And they end up losing a third-round pick. You know what? Now's a good time. Let's make that Cam Newton announcement, and nobody's even going to pay any attention to us losing a 2021 third-round draft pick. That's exactly what Bill Belichick did as he played all of us. So in the weekly visit with Hub Arkish, on the McNeil and Parkin show, you know, the guy started by talking about Cam to New England.
Obviously, the biggest news in the NFL is Cam Newton to the Patriots. My theory is he's not healthy, and I'd bet against him being their week one starter as a result of his health, not his talent. Do you believe he's healthy?
Well, I mean, there was a physical on March 23rd, and he was allegedly completely cleared for both the shoulder and foot, which had been operated on each over the last year and a half or two. Supposedly, he's 100%. I have no reason to dispute that. He has not played healthy in the league in a couple of years, but I have to accept the results of the physical. So, you know, I hope he's healthy, and we'll just have to wait and see.
Do you think he'll ever be anywhere near the player he was 5 years ago, Hub?
You know, Mac, I tend to doubt it because that year is such an outlier when you look at his entire career. I mean, he's done some great things running the football. He's made some great throws. He is not a particularly good NFL passer in terms of consistency, in terms of accuracy, in terms of touch. He's really more of an athlete than a complete quarterback. And he's also the prime example of what we see here. You know, people asking now about Lamar Jackson. Can he sustain it? What's going to happen with Kyler Murray? When we see these quarterbacks who are as much runner as passer, the half-life on their career is just shorter, you know. And so even though Newton's only 31, the good news is because he's been injured, he hasn't taken that much of a pounding the last couple of years. But I am hard-pressed to see him having another season like 2015. He accounted for, I believe, 48 touchdowns between passing and throwing, or passing and running. Now, if anybody knows how to get the best out of him, I would think it would be Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. But I'd be very surprised if he ever approaches what he did in 15 again.
When that was said of Lamar Jackson, so many people were so quick to poo-poo it. And, you know, and we all like the new flavors. There's a new star in the league. That's great. But it's a reality of the position. Look at guys historically who like to run with the football at that position. Their careers aren't very long. That's just a fact.
Yeah, it's not a criticism. It's not, you know, if there's anything wrong with Lamar Jackson. It's just that you cannot take the beating that you take when you play the game that way. And we have to also add Jackson is probably a good 25 to 30 pounds smaller than Cam Newton, a couple inches shorter, not that that matters all that much. And so, you know, common sense says it's going to pile up on him even more. I hope not. I hope the kid has 3-4 more MVP seasons. But this is just objective analysis, and that's how you have to look at the Cam Newtons and Lamar Jacksons of the world.
Well, then, Hub, I guess I don't understand if the league thought he was healthy. I mean, he's a 31-year-old former MVP who in 2018 had the second highest passer rating of his career. It was in the mid-90s, 94-something, and he had the highest completion percentage of his career, and he had 28 touchdowns in 14 games. Some of those games he was battling through an injury to his shoulder that he suffered in Week 10. He ended up getting shut down for the last two games of the season. Like, he played pretty damn well and was pretty efficient as a passer, not entirely healthy the last time we saw him. He still is young. If he's healthy, why wasn't there more of a market for his services?
You know, Danny, I think that part of the answer to that question is based on that line of thought. Why did the Carolina Panthers choose Teddy Bridgewater over Cam Newton? Because Teddy Bridgewater is never going to approach the type of season that Newton did have in 15. And so I think, you know, that's a question that has to be answered. I think the other issues, which are very real, you know, which people, you know, always want to tiptoe around, is that he is not necessarily the best leader in the world. He is not necessarily the best guy in the locker room. There are character issues that come with Cam Newton, and I'm not saying he's a bad guy, but this stuff does not stay unknown to other NFL teams. And I think that the combination possibly of concerns about the health, possibly about that he doesn't really fit any of the trending offenses in the NFL right now, and that he may bring some baggage, was enough to keep him on the market for a while. You also didn't really have anybody in the Patriots situation besides the Patriots who had a chance to be a contender and was looking specifically for somebody at that position. So I think in this particular moment, he was just a good fit for the Patriots and not a particularly good fit anywhere else.
Do you believe he'll be their opening day starter?
You know, Mac, this gets back to Danny's point. I believe he's healthy because they tell me he's healthy, but we got to wait and see because he hasn't been the last couple of years. I do think that they like Jared Stidham. I don't think they're kidding themselves for a minute that he can step in and play anywhere near the level of Tom Brady. So I would say if he's healthy, yes, I think Cam Newton will be the opening day starter. We got to remember, Josh McDaniel is the guy who drafted Tim Tebow in the first round. And when you look at the style of these guys, Newton is probably a better passer than Tebow ever was, but still more the athlete and you know, offensive weapon than quarterback. And McDaniel couldn't wait to get his hands on him. So I am really curious to see what Josh McDaniel is going to do with him. And I think if he's healthy, their hope is that he will be the opening day starter.
We're talking to Hub Arkish, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Do you think Antonio Brown is going to play in the NFL again?
Boy, you talk about a leap of faith, Danny, for anybody who's going to take a chance on him. You know, I mean, there's only so many levels of crazy you can surpass and still get another shot. And to me, it's 50-50 at best. I don't care how well he behaves or how sane he sounds from this point on. There's just been so much crazy the last year and a half that if I was a GM, I wouldn't want to take that chance. But, you know, there's always a GM and a coach who thinks they can handle the problem children that nobody else can. So I'd say 50-50 right now. Just don't know.
Yeah, since there's been an NFL, there's always been every sport. Everybody's got a fixer. He's been out of the news, I guess. I guess that's a good sign if he's out of the news. Have you heard anything about if he's undergoing treatment, if anything is going in the right direction with Brown?
You know, Mac, I think out of the news is the point. No, I haven't really heard much one way or the other. I have to confess I haven't been looking or digging. I do think the one thing he has going for him is until 2 years ago, he was a solid citizen. He was a leader in that locker room. There was never a trouble in Pittsburgh until really in tandem with the Le'Veon Bell contract issues. And then even though he had gotten a good contract, he wanted more. And with him, it became more his ego than the money. But I think the fact that for about 6 years he was a really solid citizen may bode well for him. But I'm not hearing anything current that he has, you know, recaptured that position as opposed to what we were hearing from him in the last year and a half or two.
Hub, did you hear what Ron Rivera said on our show yesterday with regards to the football team name in Washington?
I actually have, yes. And you know, to me, it's a no-win situation. It's a no-correct answer question. You know, I hear people talking about, you know, the Blackhawks logo and the Atlanta Braves and even the Cleveland Indians. And, you know, I would probably try and make the argument that none of those should be particularly offensive. There are no negative connotations, to my knowledge, that come with, you know, Indian or Braves or Blackhawks. But Redskin, we don't use it at Pro Football Weekly. We stopped using it about 6-7 years ago. We just call them Washington. And I don't know how there's going to be a winning answer on that one except just get rid of it.
Do
you think they will?
I'm sorry?
Do you think they will? Like, do you think that, you
no,
know, we're,
I mean,
we're at a time in this country where all of a sudden things that we didn't think were going to change for a long time are starting to change? Like, do you think it's going to happen?
I'd like to see it happen, but Snyder has been in court a number of times to try and protect it. And you know, clearly he is more concerned about the marketing aspects and merchandising and logo. But it's not a winning argument, you know. So I would think eventually it has to change because it's offensive. You know, if I was a Native American, how could I not be offended by that? And that seems to be the direction this country is going in. But at the same time, many of us would agree we're not going fast enough, and some people are still going to dig in their heels, you know. So I don't see it changing in the near future, but I would hope at some point it will go away because it's inappropriate.
Would you term it ridiculous that people seem to want to slap this root for change on the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, it, Chico, I was frank. I mean, I've talked to him about it. I was surprised that he took the job, you know, knowing not because of the name, but everything that goes along with that franchise, and the idea that he's going to come in there and convince Snyder to get rid of it. I think it'll change because it has to, but I think it's very unfair to try and put that on Ron. And you know, nobody has ever held that kind of sway over Snyder before. So I think eventually it'll have to change, but I'm not sure there's much Ron can do about it.
What did you think of the Bears' decision to proactively allow season ticket holders to get full refunds when we're still months away from the season?
You know, I think it good on them, and they didn't do that without consultation with the league. And you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago because of my job as a sideline reporter. I've had some insight into what's going on behind the scenes relative to access at stadiums, who's going to be in, who's going to be not. I can tell you no final decisions have been made, but they're just being realistic about it. And the best case you're going to get for any of these sports is crowds with social distancing and monitoring of it. And so by doing this, the Bears allow people who want to opt out this year to make their job easier if, in fact, they do end up where they can have 25% capacity, but they have fewer fans that they have to be fair with, because the only other option at that point becomes, I guess, of the 65,000 seats, about 59,000 are controlled by about 14,000 season ticket holders. So if half your season ticket holders take the refund, if you knock out 25,000 of those seats, it becomes a lot easier to have a lottery of some kind for the remaining ticket holders and for them each to get, you know, 5 games, 6 games, whatever it might be. I am actually a season ticket holder and a PSL owner, and I haven't had a chance to look at the email yet. I just want to make sure that, you know, all the PSL rights are guaranteed and that there's no issues coming back next year. And I would probably tend to take the refund because, honestly, guys, you know, I'm a Cubs season ticket holder, too. I'm not going out there. I'm sorry. I just, with what we see happening around the country, it's not safe. And I think a lot of people will lean that way. And I congratulate the Bears for being
leaders in this particular area, and I think it's a smart decision. Now we'll see what fans decide to do.
How do you expect the Bears to handle the national anthem this year, Hub?
You know, Mac, I got to believe that we're going to see more kneeling and fist raising than less. I'm sure there'll even be some other guys who are trying to be creative. The one thing the Bears have been pretty true to is they say, whatever we do, we're going to do as a team. And I think this five-man social leadership committee has been pretty strong. These guys are doing a nice job of leading. So I expect, well, I shouldn't say I expect. My guess is that we will see them take a knee as a team or some other, form of acknowledgement of the situation. Maybe it won't be a knee, but I think that you will see the entire team doing something to recognize the combination of the Black Lives Matter movement and the, poor treatment by law enforcement of minorities.
Yeah, and just one thing back to the season ticket holder. Like, I didn't know those numbers, but that's kind of what I said yesterday. Like, sure, good on the Bears, but I think my guess is every team in the NFL is going to have to do it, right? If your numbers are right, that 59,000 of the 65,000 seats are season ticket holders, and they're only going to be allowed to put 20% for a number, like that's what baseball is looking at, and obviously baseball starting up a couple of months ahead of football, into the stands. Every team in the NFL is not going to be allowed to have all of their season ticket holders in there anyway. So this is probably just like the first way of slicing through some of those numbers, right? Like my guess is every team has a higher number of season tickets sold than the maximum capacity that's going to be allowed in their stadiums. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there's no question about that. And the one thing I can tell you with certainty, from sources and people I've talked to, there is going to be a league policy on this. I mean, either there are going to be, fans at social distance, roughly 25% of the normal crowd, or there's going to be nobody. But there isn't going to be, a choice C. And I can tell you with certainty that those Bears numbers, they're not exact, but they're very close. And they're not unusual in the NFL. I'd say about 25, 26, 27 of the teams have those same kind of ratios. There are places like Jacksonville, Cincinnati, there are more single seats that become available. But at the end of the day, every team in the NFL has far more, seats committed to season ticket holders than they're going to be able to use if they're trying to play at 25% capacity.
With everything that's been going on in Florida, Hub, are you even more pessimistic than you have been that this whole thing is doable?
Mac, I you're being fair. Pessimistic is a good word. I just hate to use it because I don't want to be pessimistic. I'm trying to be realistic. And I keep coming back to the same thing, guys. I try not to write about it often because people just get mad at me and say I'm just peeing on their parade. But,
right.
The whole idea of an expanded roster to replace players that test positive for all these sports and all that stuff, that's all fine. But as soon as somebody tests positive, everybody they've been exposed to is supposed to self-isolate and quarantine. I mean, that's the most simple, basic bottom line that we have. And so unless, the NFL, unless Major League Baseball is going to say, well, we're not going to follow the science here. We're going to do it our way. I just don't see how this all works out to have games on schedule and on time in the way we're used to. And Lord knows, I hope I'm wrong, but all we can do is follow the science, and the science says you can't do it and keep people safe.
Is there any talk of the NFL doing what Major League Baseball is doing in terms of, like, we know that there's a practice squad, right? We know guys can get signed off the street in a given week, but is there any talk of expanded rosters to allow for kind of a cushion when it comes to positive tests, which are inevitable?
I think there's all kinds of conversation right now, Danny, but I talked to Bernsey about this yesterday. At the end of the day, the NFLPA has not been heard from yet, and the whole baseball scenario was the players through their union and the owners finally trying to come to some agreement. Well, you're going to have the same situation with the NFL, and it was noteworthy that DeMaurice Smith, who, as you guys know, I am not a fan of, to say the least, but in this case, came out, I don't know if it was yesterday or Sunday, whenever his comments were, and was very critical of Tom Brady and some of the other star quarterbacks, leading these informal team workouts that we're not practicing the appropriate social distancing and everything. The Players Association as a union is going to be heard from on this. And again, you know, with baseball, a lot of the game is played at social distance. It's hard to imagine a more dangerous activity in this COVID world than playing football. And so it will be very interesting to see, you know, once this becomes a reality, once they say we're actually going back to work, we're starting training camp, how the players react both individually and as a group, because we really don't know yet. We heard Tariq Cohn tell us a couple of weeks ago, you know, he hasn't been terribly worried about it. He tries, but he hasn't been great with the social distancing, still doing, and I already forgot, whether it's dapping or dabbing, whatever it is. I think most players are going to be a little more concerned than that. And I'm not knocking Tariq. I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I'm just saying that there's a lot of players who are going to say, I don't care how much money you're paying me, this isn't worth it. And that's what makes all this so problematic. Until there is some agreement between the union and ownership, and then after they have that agreement, they're going to have to do what baseball did and at least give players the option to opt out, you know, without being punished. We'll see how many of these guys are willing to play, you know, and then we'll have a better idea of what the roster sizes are going to look like and what the rules will be.
Have you heard any rumors of anybody taking a pass?
I've had a number of players tell me they're not playing, but it's all been off the record at this point. And it's certainly not, when I say a number of players, there's 1,800 of them. You know, I've right. talked to a few dozen. But yeah, I know of some players who've said they're not playing. But that's, as I said, they told me off the record, so I'm not naming names now.
Okay. Any locally?
Current players?
Guys, I don't want to go there. I don't want to ever become part of the story. There are some guys who aren't going to play. They could change their mind between now and then. So for me to say now, they're all waiting to hear the rules, too.
All right. Well, DAP with a P is what Tariq Cohn was talking about, like hugs and hand pounds and fist bumps and that sort of thing. DAB with a B, an aggressive way to smoke marijuana from a synthetic wax.
This time I'll remember, okay?
Yeah. There we go. Hub Arkish, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, Hub, I got a baseball theory for you. I want to run past you as a Cubs season ticket holder. You ready for a baseball theory?
Sure.
Okay. I'm worried about the Cubs in this set of circumstances. They don't strike me as the team. Veteran guys, most of them have won a World Series. Many of them have already been paid. If there's going to be a team that's going to be like go through the motions in a 60-game season that feels weird when there's all these other priorities in the world because of COVID, it feels like the Cubs will not be the team at the top of the list of being motivated. Same with Astros, Red Sox, Nationals, like other recent champions, as opposed to a young, hungry team like the White Sox or a really talented team that hasn't won together like the Dodgers or the Yankees. I feel like this is not setting up well for the makeup of the Cubs roster. What do you think of that theory?
Danny, I think that you could be absolutely right in terms of a lot of the teams that you just mentioned, but I think that there is an alternative theory that comes with the Cubs, which is that so many of them, and this is from, you know, the beat guys who I'm friendly with, who I've talked to, and a couple of players that I know a little bit, they were really pissed the way last year ended. And they also were not particularly happy about the way Joe Maddon was treated. They're thrilled to have their buddy David Ross, the veteran guys that we're talking about. But I think it was Len Casper I heard talking about this last week. They are really highly motivated to prove that the team we saw last August and September is not the Chicago Cubs. So I think there is something to the theory that you espoused, but I think there's also the alternative theory that I just mentioned. And the question is which one is going to kick in. So I think I'll tell you what, if they have a start anything like 16 in a 60-game season, they become a prohibitive favorite. Now, can they have that start? I don't know, you know, how they're going to get these pitchers ready. They're having these summer camps, but with what, 4-3 exhibition games, you just wonder who's going to have the starting pitching and the bullpen, but mainly the starting pitching early. And the team that gets hot, you know, you come out, you win 15 out of 20, you're already way ahead of everybody else. And we do know the Cubs are capable of that.
if they can pull off this 60-game schedule, I think it's going to be one hell of an exciting couple of months of baseball, regardless who your favorite team is. I think all bets are off, and I loved what David Ross said yesterday, Hub. If there's a trophy to be, you know, won, yeah, I'd like to win it. And I don't agree with Danny at all, especially with a couple of their key veterans. You look at Lester and Rizzo have to be looking at a 60-game schedule at this point in their careers with their health issues as a gift.
I couldn't agree more, and I will tell you, Mac, I think baseball is running one tremendous risk here. I guess I understand why they're doing it, but, you know, they want the ticket revenue for 162. See, here's the other thing about the NFL, guys. The ticket revenue, it's not like it's peanuts. But they're all going to be profitable without it. And baseball and basketball and hockey, with their 162 and 82 game schedules, they really rely on that ticket revenue. But I think the risk the Cubs are running here, we may love this 60-game season. We may find that even if it's not 60, but 75 or 80 makes it a lot more exciting than going through the dog days and having 162. So it'll be really interesting to see how this all works out. I think if they can keep everybody healthy enough and have a highly competitive 60-game season, they may struggle to get back to 162 games and have people want to come out and see that many and pay for that many.
There's Parkins, another one of his harebrained ideas. I think he was just committed to the bit of getting Hub to strongly disagree on something. And that's why he floated that theory, or at least wanted to get Hub's reaction there. I do not agree with him. Now, if they have a losing season, it doesn't mean, you know, it's because of their mental state. Like, maybe they're just not good enough. Or maybe it's the extremely small sample that we have this season, I think, that we have. It might be a 3-game sample, and then nobody is crowned. Who knows? We'll get there in a few weeks and find out. And what do you know? Maybe if you're a Comcast customer, you'll have those games on the marquee network. Still don't have it, right? Okay, just checking. Did you hear that Chicago is one of the four final cities in the running to be one of two hub cities, not Hub Arkish, hub cities for the NHL postseason? They're still in the running. Danny Ecker from Cranes has the details. He appeared on the Dan Bernstein Show. We'll hear from him next on Score Rewind Hour, Sports Radio 670, The Score, and the Radio.com app.
Score Rewind, playing back the best that you missed today on The Score.
Earlier, we brought you a small chunk of Cranes' Danny Ecker and his news today that Chicago, one of the four final teams in the hunt for two cities by the NHL. I'm guessing one in the United States, one in Canada, and Chicago and Vegas, the two cities still alive here in the running in the U.S. of A. And here's more of Danny Ecker on the Dan Bernstein Show, just talking about some of logistics, how this would work here in town.
If this is going to happen like 11 days from now, we should know what, today or tomorrow, if this is the case?
That's all the indications I'm getting is that, you know, this was supposed to happen, you know, late last week or over the weekend. I don't know exactly what is delaying all of the announcements, but they don't have time to wait around here if they want to stick to this schedule.
So how does this work? How does it work from a housing perspective, from the hotels and dining, et cetera, to actually ice time and who and where and what?
Yeah, so that's what I got my hands on late last week, which was more details about Chicago's bid of how they would host this. And it all really centers around McCormick Place, or part of the McCormick Place campus being turned into sort of an NHL player village. They would use the Marriott Marquis Hotel, which is that big 1,200-room hotel that opened a couple of years ago next to the convention center. That would be where everyone stays, and we're talking hundreds of players and team personnel. That's connected by a sky bridge to Wintrust Arena, which would be a training center, and then they would actually open a bunch of hospitality tents connected to the hotel that would be sort of, you know, gaming lounges and other activities for players and personnel to be able to be, you know, socially distancing, but also, you know, live and do other things and have fun while they're not playing. So that would be the bubble. And then they'd be shuttling those players and teams back and forth to the United Center to play, and then they'd use Fifth Third Arena, which is by the United Center, as well as the two Johnny's Ice House rinks near the United Center for practices. So, you know, the city has made this pitch and saying, look, we can pull it off. We can, you know, isolate McCormick Place. And, you know, McCormick Place has been mostly empty anyway. So they could say, look, we can really control this, control your environment. You got a lot of ice. And hey, by the way, we've had some pretty good testing numbers recently and good case numbers that have been dropping compared to other cities that are in the running. And so I think the city is holding out hope that they still have a chance.
There is such a thing as temporary ice, and I don't know what Wintrust is able to do, but like when an ice show comes to town in some cow palace somewhere, that they can get it down there. It's not the best ice in the world, but it's functional with temporary compressors in an arena. Do you know if there's any idea of doing that somewhere?
You know, I asked about that, and I don't know, at least for Wintrust Arena, I know that wasn't the plan. I don't think it's hosted an ice event yet. I'm not sure about that, but I don't think it has. And I'm not sure if it's really set up to do so. But I haven't heard of any other ice, temporary setups being used. I'm sure, that certainly could be in play in other cities, too, anyway, because, I mean, you're looking at cities that only have so much ice, and if these players are looking for practice time, and obviously it has to be of a certain quality. I mean, that's another thing holding all this up, is I think the NHL and the NHL Players Association need to really reach agreements on a lot of different details about where the players are going to go, quarantining, testing, before they're going to go ahead and commit to a city. So I'm not sure about temporary ice, but I think again, that might be one of those things that, they're having, that's maybe a little bit lower on their list than testing capacity and things like that. I mean, part of the Chicago bid was, they said they're going to have Northwestern Memorial Hospital doing all the testing and getting results back a day later. I think Gary Bettman said they were going to have to do somewhere between like 25,000 and 30,000 tests total when you're testing everybody every day. And so testing capacity here was a big thing. That was part of the pitch, was they would use the big East atrium at the United Center which is the thing they added on a couple years ago, as just this testing facility where they just churn players and personnel in and out of there to get tested and get the results back the next morning before they leave the hotel. So there's all kinds of these little details that they got to work out, including ice time. And I guess hopefully in the next hours here or days, we're going to have an answer.
Danny Ecker on the Dan Bernstein Show earlier today, Sports Radio 670, The Score. My name is Joe Ostrowski, out of time for tonight. Check out the podcast if you missed any of the show. I just tweeted out a couple of links to my two interviews from tonight. Find those at Joe 0670, at Joe 0670. Lawrence Holmes dropped by for 40 fun commercial-free minutes and an interesting conversation on the landscape that is quickly changing in sports betting in Illinois with Brad Allen, DraftKings, on the way in. I'll be back tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. Grobbers here at midnight. Thank you, Adam Stasinski, for producing tonight. Talk to you tomorrow right here on 670 The Score. Good night.
I guess you're the winner by default.
Default! Woohoo! The two sweetest words in the English language.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.